Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. If you're watching on video, I'm in brand new surroundings. Today, I am in St. Cloud. I want to thank KNSI Radio for helping me out with the digs today as I'm doing double duty this week. I am pleased as punch to bring back an old friend today as we are covering monsters today, monsters, myths, legends, and real encounters. Richard Estep is back with us today as we're covering an old topic with an old friend in a little bit of new territory and some old familiar territory as well. Let me get you familiar with Richard and we'll bring him in. Richard Estep is the author of numerous books ranging from paranormal nonfiction and ufology to history and current affairs. His books include Serial Killers, The Mind's Methods and Mayhem of History's Most Notorious Murderers, The Serial Killer Next Door, The Double Lives of Notorious Murderers, Grifters, Frauds and Crooks. Sounds like my family reunion. True Stories of American Corruption and the Handy Armed Forces Answer Book. He's a regular columnist for Haunted Magazine and has written for the Journal of American, of Emergency Medical Services. Richard appears regularly on the TV shows Haunted Files, Haunted Hospitals, Paranormal 911, and Paranormal Night Shift. And he has guested on Destination Fear and A Haunting. He makes his home in Colorado with his wife and a menagerie of adopted animals. And we thank him for that as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome back one more time. And it's always our pleasure to welcome back Richard Estep. Thank you so much, my friend, for coming back. And I know it's a busy week for you. It's launch week for this wonderful book as well. It's out, came out yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Hey, Tim, good after morning, because I'm not sure which it is. Like, we're straddling time zones, you and I. So good to see you. Good to be back. And I think we got the message that we're drinking monsters.
Yes, we're drinking monsters, we're talking monsters, and it's a monster type of day.
I think these guys need to be promoing me or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I've got it up here as well on for talking video. I've got my awesome iPad copy as well. Monsters, Myths, Legends.
Really, I missed a trick not going for a monster sponsor.
He really did, yeah. And you know, it used to be back in the day, Monster Energy used to throw money around like it was water. Yeah. So it's but I think,
well,
yeah,
next time.
Yeah, I think you need to do the book tour, have it sponsored by Monster, and just go on a barnstorming tour of America.
Well, for future projects, I guess there's a ghost energy drink, right?
There is. So yes. Yeah.
You can get the whole paranormal covered. Now all we need is a UFO, and we are good to go.
How about a Chewy Chupacabra jerky?
Chewy Picabra. That could go down well.
I like it. Yeah. See, we can get a whole line of things going.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, there's no off position on the genius switch. That's what I say. It's an old Letterman line. Yeah. Let me just launch into this whole thing, Richard, by asking you, with the Monsters book, why this turn with monsters? Why now?
I think that monsters are a perennial fascination. At least they have been for me. I mean, what kid growing up doesn't love monster stories? You know, starting with the old classic Universal monsters. And then I'm a child of the 80s, so stuff like John Carpenter's The Thing. There was no shortage of great monster material in my formative years. And I've mostly done books about ghosts, I think, in the realm of the strange. And so I just had wanted to branch out and cast a little bit of a wider net, and the good people at Visible Ink were like, yeah, let's do it. Let's put your slant on monsters. And the big challenge with a book like this is not what to put in, but what to leave out.
Right.
You know, you have such a rich vein of material to be mined. So I went for a mix of monsters that were, I thought, classic, and then a few new ones that hopefully folks have never heard of.
Let's get into that. The Hodag, which is not a popular one. It's not one that rolls off the tongue, not one that hits top of the mind awareness, right? But the Hodag is one from my neck of the woods. Let's talk a little bit about the Hodag.
Yeah, and I think like putting in a regional monster or two was fun. I had been to the Mothman Festival in Point Pleasant. Mothman is also in this book, and was doing research for a book, and I learned about the Hodag there. There were some guys from your neck of the woods, and they had a Hodag captured in a crate, or at least pretty sure it was just a hydraulic ram that was, triggerable to make the crate shake like there was something inside. But you could see kids, this brought me such joy. You could see kids just wide-eyed with bewilderment as they were looking at this crate, rattling back and forth with the warning Hodag signs on it. So that made me kind of, I loved how much fun they were having with it. But I also had wanted to just kind of delve into that a little and learn more about the story because it's one of those great tall tales that I'm sure you grew up with.
And it's one of those that you hear about. You go out in the woods, right? Okay, so like most Midwest kids, you kind of you have your rite of passage. You're either going fishing, you're going hunting, you're doing something with an elder male, right? And so I got drug out to do both. So you automatically you either get a bow, you get a gun, you get something, and you go out and you're told to point it and shoot and do whatever. So while you're out there, you hear one of two things, and it's generally from one of your friends. Oh, so you were brave enough to go out there, huh? Yeah. Well, did you see this? Or did you see that? And it's more than just bears, because bears are the thing that, is gonna be the obvious thing to scare you. And that was always my fear. I'm gonna go out in the woods, I'm gonna go sit in a tree, I'm gonna look for a deer, and a bear is gonna grab me out of a tree and absolutely maul me. That was my big fear, right? But then you start hearing things about Bigfoot or different monsters or creatures in the woods. And I never wanted to go back up north again. I just didn't. But I started hearing different creatures and monsters and different things. And are you sure you want to go up there again? And then, no, I don't want to go up there again. And then I'd bring it up to like my great uncle and he'd laugh and he'd go, oh, that's bullshit. Right? And then I'd feel stupid.
Well, I mean, the Hodag stories are just tall stories. I mean, I'm pretty sure, but it's so much a part of the culture in your region. I mean, there is I do believe it's the official state monster, which I think is fantastic that there is an official state monster. I think every state should have its official monster, Some states are a little spoiled for choice, like I'm looking at you, West Virginia. But I think they would have to go with Mothman. And then there's going to be a fight over Sasquatch and who gets, does that go to Oregon? Does that go to Ohio? Because right now, Ohio is just filled with Bigfoot Sasquatch sightings. I don't know, but they're so woven into the culture of the US, coast to coast monsters. You can't hit a single state that doesn't have some kind of monster story prevalent in it.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. You bring up there's a chapter that talks about the Kraken. One of the things that's most interesting to me in the book, and I'm gonna go sideways here because you bring up sports teams and how sports teams have named themselves after like the Seattle Kraken and the New Jersey Devils, and they've kind of taken on the cryptozoological as far as a mascot for their team. But I don't know what it is about hockey teams that have decided that they're going to adopt the cryptozoological.
I think it's because hockey is a pretty, I mean, I was a firefighter for 15 years. And so you watch firefighters and cops get on the ice, it's some of the most brutal clashes, right? And I think that because we're talking about cryptids, a lot of them are supposed to be very savage, very animal, they attack kind of very aggressively. I think that's what it is, a Hodag, which is basically a monster dead water buffalo zombie creature with fangs, is pretty fierce. Or you look at the Jersey Devil, the name alone. So I think that's why it lends itself to especially hockey teams, don't you think?
I think so. And the fact that, well, for the longest time, the New Jersey Devils logo was just simply the horns, the little pitchfork horns, and then it kind of left you in a mystery. It never actually had a picture of the actual New Jersey Devils. So it left you in suspense.
It's so bloody ridiculous. I mean, when you look at the Jersey Devil, you know, the idea that you have this goat faced, like, it just is a weird, whoever came up with the story. And, you know, there are multiple kind of sources for its appearance, but it's not going to make a monster of the week on Supernatural, is it? Like, that's not the kind of thing that, it's not a polished, you know, monster. It's kind of ridiculous when you look at it. So despite its name, I think the Jersey Devil is one of the least scary appearing monster stories that's out there.
Yet the New Jersey Devils themselves, the team, has kind of lent and leaned into that supernatural thing of, we could be something a lot more dangerous or scary than just the goat face thing.
Well, one monster that I didn't cover, which I kind of regret with hindsight now, is the Tasmanian Devil. And of course, we're all familiar with the cartoon character, you know, Taz.
Right.
And how, and he's cute and he's cuddly and he's adorable. But then, you know, the stories are supposed to be significantly more blood chilling. So
the one thing I kept thinking of when I read about New Jersey Devils in the book is the episode of Seinfeld where Putty puts on the makeup. Are you familiar with that? Where
I'm not.
You're not. Okay. Well, there's just briefly, because I know some of the audience has probably seen it, but there's an episode where they go to a Rangers game. The Seinfeld crew goes to the Rangers game, and Putty decides, Elaine's boyfriend decides to show up, and he decides to dress in devil's gear, and he paints his face red. And he's got the devil horns on, and he's the odd one out. Of course, he's rooting for the other team. And they end up running into, I think it was either a priest or a rabbi on the street, and he's in a car, and he's like, I'm the devil! Ah! And the guy ends up passing away from a heart attack or something to that effect. So it's the whole, you know, iconography. That, there you go. But, you know, it's the whole play on that. So that whole idea that New Jersey has taken it past the New Jersey Devil cryptozoological and brought it into now the satanic, so to speak, is kind of the joke, I guess, right?
I feel like there's less of a satanic connection with the Jersey Devil, and it's more, despite the D word, I feel that it's just more a culturally acceptable folklorish, you know, like, you don't hear anybody making the sign of the cross to ward off the Jersey Devil, you know, or anything like that. And it's got such a colorful story, and it ties in with tales of like Captain Kidd as well, you know, and there are a few tall tales that kind of go along with it. But I loved also that it was associated with the Pine Barrens, which the scariest thing about the Pine Barrens really is that it's a mob dumping ground for the bodies of people they've killed, which I think they even did that in The Sopranos.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? So I think that's kind of a cool story. And the stories of the Jersey Devil, of course, you know, go back longer than the mob does in the United States. But that link between monsters and organized crime fascinates me. In my native Britain, the British Isles, stories of devil dogs and headless horsemen were both created by smugglers to keep people clear of certain stretches of the beach so that they would bring their moonshine ashore, you know, at night. And these stories of glowing red-eyed phantom dogs like haunting the stretches of beach were great for the smugglers. They actually started them and they fueled them in local pubs. So I also love that, like, you know, monsters have served a purpose, whether it's for criminals or sports teams throughout our history.
Absolutely perfect. You had mentioned Mothman before, and I know we had talked before about your excursion with yourself and a few other author friends over to West Virginia to explore
Point Pleasant,
Point Pleasant and the Mothman Festival. If you had one encounter with Mothman, and I know I didn't ask this previously of you, what would you want to take away from it? If you had to, one wish, if you had to actually have an encounter with it, I know a lot of us as investigators, we kind of have our, you know, if I could have this encounter with this particular being, what would I want to take away from it? What would you want to take away with an encounter from Mothman?
A really compelling 1080p video role. I would, you know, what fascinates me about Mothman is the various kind of theories and hypotheses, rather, about its origin. I love the fact that we often forget, because Mothman is in the book, of course, it is regarded as a cryptid or a monster. But a lot of people forget the connection with UFO UAP. Like, there was this enormous UFO flap going on at the time of the initial Mothman sightings throughout that whole area, throughout the whole valley region. And so many have hypothesized that perhaps there is either an extraterrestrial link with Mothman, or does it have an interdimensional origin? I'd love to know the why of that. I'd love to know if these were two completely unrelated things, the UFO flap and the Mothman sightings, or were they connected or linked? It's something that still is debated today.
So let's say you're in your neighborhood, you're near a bridge, you see this creature appear. What's the first thing you do? Whip out the camera or do you try to talk to it?
Oh, man. You know, I'm mainly, as you know, a ghost guy, and for years I shook my head when people would tell me these stories about seeing apparitions, and I'd be like, "But you have in your pocket, you have a phone, you have a high-res camera right there. Did you not think for 1 second to pull it out and take a picture or take some video?" And then when I had what I think is an encounter with an apparition, about 10 years ago, it never for a minute occurred to me to pull out my phone. It was the strangest thing. So I would love to think I would get that footage. But here's the other thing, Tim, you know, without making this political or anything, but we live in an age now where no matter how good a piece of video footage might be, it half the country is going to declare it to be fake because it's too good. The alternative is you get something so grainy that we throw that out of the window, and it's like, well, that could be anything. You know, seeing is no longer believing, right? We've all seen the AI videos that are making the rounds and are only getting more and more convincing. So I almost question the value now of video evidence. So I think I would go more for the experiential. I would try and make contact and communicate.
Just speaking for myself, I know the last few years when I'm just talking about wild animals, when I come across a wild animal that comes up to me or has an experience with me, I tend to want to talk to it first and make a bond or communicate with it. I almost think like I would do that now with a spirit or cryptozoological creature
So,
or
does that include the bear that young Timmy was scared of? Like, if that happened today, would you try and have a conversation?
believe it or not, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, not if it's charging at me and roaring. No, then I'm getting the hell out of there. I'm beating as many feet, one and a half that I have as I can. But I obviously if it's being silent and doing its thing, I'm not going to go up and go, "How you doing, bear? How's your mother?" But I'm
Well, you could try a handshake. I know Americans are a big believer in the right to bear arms.
Oh, I see what you did there. No, I but I'm not going to disturb its peace, but if the situation's right, if it's calm, I'm calm. I'm not going to go up and, but if, I'm not going to feed it either. I'm
Begs
not
the
going to do anything
question.
stupid.
Yeah, you've got me thinking now, like, which monster would you most want to sit down and try and chill with? You know, like which would be the most survivable monster encounter? That has me thinking.
I think Mothman
And
is
I,
it.
well, I'm not aware of there the initial Mothman encounter. There was a dead dog story, which seemed to travel like 50 miles as well, interdimensionally. I thought that was fascinating, but I'm not aware of any accounts of Mothman harming or injuring or even threatening anybody, even though there is this pervasive sense of fear that accompanies a lot of Mothman encounters. A lot of witnesses say they're overcome by this almost crippling dread, you know, but I'm not aware of anyone actually being harmed. So yeah, you might be right there. Mothman might be the one to go with.
The other one that seems like it has minimal, I shouldn't say minimal risk because that's not necessarily true, but if you want to talk percentages, maybe 50 to 75% success rate. Again, I'm just throwing out numbers, pulling them out of my ass, so to speak. But Sasquatch seems like they're probably more genteel than malevolent. experience.
You know, I hope so. That's one of my current book projects, actually, is a longer, it's in search of Bigfoot style book. And I'm still unharmed as of this point. I live in Colorado, as you know, and we have like a lot of sightings, a lot of reports of Sasquatch from the Bailey area. And it's been hypothesized that if you believe in the interdimensionality of Sasquatch, which some researchers do, that there may be some kind of portal up in the hills and mountains up there. But yeah, a lot of the vast majority of the Sasquatch sightings seem to be either positive or at least not dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the other one that I would think would be somewhat survivable. Everything else, I think, I mean, I really don't think you're going to swim down and pet Nessie, right? I mean, that's probably not going to happen. You're probably going to get a chunk taken out of you.
I don't know. I mean, there are no Loch Ness monster killings that I'm aware of. And sometimes it's interesting. There was a very rare incident from the newspaper archives when a body that was found on the shore of Loch Ness was initially blamed on the Loch Ness monster, even though, you know, nothing had taken a chomp out of this guy's corpse. One of the kind of sinister things about Loch Ness is that it has a reputation for not giving up its dead. Due to the coldness of the water and the fact that it's fresh water, not salt water, anybody that drowns in Loch Ness tends to stay in Loch Ness, which is an interesting theory. And that's one of the theories that's been put forward as for why we don't have a Nessie carcass.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, that's a really sinister phrase. You know, the Loch doesn't give up its dead.
Which is why you probably don't want to drink out of
Yeah.
it.
I mean, plenty of people have swum in it, have swum in the Loch, you know. I know people that have researched there. I mean, our mutual friend MJ Dixon got out on deep scan the boat and, you know, went across the Loch. What fascinates me is, as rational and scientific as we are, it's a pretty terrifying idea to have a body of water that big and that deep. And I don't know how comfortable I would feel swimming in it.
Yeah, I know. No.
It's that idea of something below, isn't it? That
Yeah.
idea of some unseeable thing below you.
When you say something like the lock doesn't give up its dead, you know what scene I automatically go to and what movie? Friday the 13th, where the hand up out of the water, you know, at the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the most class. You know, you're being set up when that really nice music starts playing and she's
Yeah.
in the boat, Adrienne Barbeau, right? If memory serves. I could be wrong about that. But either way, the actress, she's just kind of in the water and she trails in her hand. And you're like, I'm about to get sucker punched. Here it comes. Here it comes. Here it comes. Yep. There we
Yep,
go.
there it is.
Yep. That ruined boating for a generation.
Yeah. See, so I that probably is why I'll never go hunting for Nessie over at Loch Ness. It's that exactly right there, indeed. All right, let's take our break. When we come back, I want to bring up the phenomena of vampires and zombies, and kind of go through the modern day phenomena of it, and why it's even more important to us now. Even now, there's a new season of The Last of Us out there on HBO. It seems like AMC is still chomping at the bit with Walking Dead and doing different Walking Dead shows, even though the main one is gone. It's still a topic out there. It's still out there, and we're still focused on zombies as a society. And you've got chapters here both on vampires and zombies. I want to tackle that when we come back. And I want to give you kudos, my friend, on using a word in this book that's one of my all-time favorite words, and it has to do with a chapter on the Fresno Nightcrawlers. I'll have you think about what word that may be in the break. So we're going to take a break. Richard Estep is our guest. The book is a wonderful one, folks, and it's put up by Visible Ink Press. We have a link in the description of this program, so you can go get it. It is Monsters, Myths, Legends, and Real Encounters. Richard Estep is our guest. When we come back, vampires, zombies, and my favorite all-time word that's in this book, and it has to do with the Fresno Nightcrawlers chapter. When we come back with Richard Estep right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest, Richard Estep, the name of the book, Monsters, Myths, Legends, and Real Encounters. It's available from Visible Ink Press. We have a link here in the description of this program, so you can go get it. And please, go get it. It's a wonderful book. All right, Richard. You take on the subject of vampires in this book. And, of course, I think vampires have been widely hated from the time it was first reported in the Middle Ages to the time they've been widely loved in the last century or two with cinema, right?
I think we adore our vampires now, at least, but we have a better understanding of their origins. Monsters in general have always been this kind of black box that we as a species, we've kind of used that as a catch-all, a hold-all container for things we don't understand that were usually negative and frightening. You know, so tuberculosis, coughing up blood, especially when somebody died of tuberculosis, was easily explainable with vampirism, certainly back in the day. And the 19th century US vampire epidemic, we understood tuberculosis at that point in time, but you still had these rural communities, especially in New England, that absolutely believed that these poor people were vampires. And then we've always had this kind of, you know, love-hate relationship with them. The silver screen loves them. Vampires are still immensely popular. Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles TV series is doing gangbusters as we speak. And I think not even each generation, but every few years, we see that reinvention, you know. We went from the kind of classic Dracula caped, red velvet, satin-lined cape, rather, to the sparkling vampires of Twilight. When vampires were hip and young and, you know, teenage looking, or even the Lost Boys, same deal. Yeah. The Lost Boys made vampires hip for my generation. And then all of a sudden, we've just seen the pendulum swing back the other way in 2024 when Robert Eggers remade Nosferatu. And there's no way you would call that Nosferatu cool. It is a decaying, rotting, shambling corpse. So the vampire myth has resurfaced in cycles throughout our culture, and I don't think it shows any signs of slowing down.
Do you think Nosferatu, at least this version of it, did anything to change that genre at all, or even try to put the fear back into people with that genre?
I think it did. It brought the terror back, the creeping, crawling, lurking monster in the darkness. You know, there is nothing suave and sophisticated and sexy, dare I say it, about Nosferatu, which, you know, you look at the Lost Boys, you look at Twilight, they're desirable. They paint the vampire existence as being a very desirable one. Nobody wants to be Nosferatu, or virtually nobody wants to be Nosferatu, right? So they made vampires ugly again with that movie.
Yet there's a more than a hint of power there, right? I mean, he's still the most powerful thing on the planet, which does have an allure to it.
It does, but it also speaks to the price that you have to pay. I mean, most of the sexier kind of hip vampires, they don't talk a lot about what that must do to you in exchange. Vampirism is always a deal with the devil, right?
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form. So you're always, despite the power you have, excuse me, you're tormented. It is not the greatest existence, although it may appear like it. And then I think also in Nosferatu, you get that kind of power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely theme coming out.
Yeah, most definitely. You also have a chapter on zombies, and you talk about why zombies are so important to American culture. And I'm astounded on how long the zombie phenomenon has held on, especially in the last 20 years here on television and movies, and the variants of zombies that they keep coming up with. Why is it such a desperation that we hold on to the zombie genre here, especially in America?
I think on the one hand, they're a safe target. So one of the things I wrote about in the book, I had a lot of fun researching, was the U.S. military's con plan to deal with a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Which was done as a training exercise. You know, nobody seriously in the U.S. military said, you know, maybe the dead are going to rise from the grave and we should have a plan for that. They used it as a, I think, very imaginative teaching tool for their junior officers. But I do feel that zombies provide a safe target. You can watch a zombie show and enjoy seeing human-ish, you know, figures getting skewered and decapitated and headshot and stuff like that. And it's fine, right? Because they're zombies. They're not real people, but they look kind of like people. So it kind of satisfies that violent urge a lot of people have. In addition to that, I feel like as the world gets more dystopian, most zombie apocalypse stories are end of the world stories. We all kind of feel like the world's edging a little bit more towards that week by week. You know, I think nobody would dispute that. And we all kind of wonder, how would I do, you know, surviving in the world of The Walking Dead? Would I be the machete guy? Would I be the bow and arrow girl? You know, who would I be? So board games like Zombicide have never been more popular either. So I always think, you know, Tim, we have this kind of fascination with how would I survive during the zombie apocalypse? You know, I've had that discussion with my friends, like, okay, whose house do we go to when the zombie apocalypse starts? Who's got the most supplies? Who's got the most defensible home? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, the other part of it too that I find is sometimes the stories between the humans are more fascinating than the stories of cutting up the zombies, and the human behavior and the, some, whether it be the deplorable human behavior that happens between people or the uplifting human behavior that happens between people are some of the more captivating things that happen on the screen and really reflect back at us. How exactly would we would we react modern day to whatever would happen out there?
Monster stories in general are often morality tales. And I think zombie stories definitely. So, you know, as Walking Dead fans, every time, and I'm not talking about the many spin-offs now, but the original series, you know, each season you would meet a bunch of interesting new people and it would be time to play that game called Let's Figure Out What's Wrong With Them and How Evil They Really Are. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get this canvas where they can, the storytellers can have this discussion about human nature under stress. And as you said, you know, there are the good who will still do good in the worst circumstances. And then there are those that are very much the opposite. So I think our monster stories have value in teaching not just children, but in teaching all of us, you know, basic morality and allowing writers to explore those themes.
I think too, Robert Kirkman in The Walking Dead did something as well that really pulled the heartstrings, especially the first couple of seasons, in that they brought children into it and they really turned a corner, and that they said, you know what, no one's safe. And
yeah, and that's a fair point, right? And it is a way to look at child mortality and things of that nature. It is one of the great taboos. You know, child death is one of the things that our culture still doesn't like to confront and talk about. And I don't blame anybody for that. You know, parents that have lost a child, it's a horrible, horrible, one of the worst things that can possibly happen to you. And again, I think there's a way to explore that somewhat safely in that genre.
Yeah. All right, I told you I was going to give you credit for one of my favorite words ever being used in one of the chapters here. First of all, let's get into one of the more unusual monsters that's in here, and that's the Fresno Nightcrawlers. Can you tell us a little bit about what a Fresno Nightcrawler is?
No, because I have no idea, and I think it's fantastic. The Fresno Nightcrawler, it's one of those things where I'm like, this is one that usually you don't see in monster books, you know? But for those that are unaware, the Fresno Nightcrawler, the clue to the location is in the name, of course, Fresno. I don't know why they're called Nightcrawlers, because they don't crawl. But if you look at the video footage out there, and I encourage you to do this, go to YouTube or some video source and punch in Fresno Nightcrawler. It is like pairs of pants, disembodied legs that are walking kind of, but also kind of flowing in the weirdest kind of twisting way, that were captured at night on camera. And nobody's entirely sure what they were, where they came from, or where they went. And to my knowledge, there were a couple of instances of this. One of them was captured on official, like, you know, cameras, not by somebody with a Super 8 video camera or anything like that. And they remain unproven. You would think it was a hoax, except number one, it would be kind of challenging to do well. And number two, nobody really stepped forward to claim credit for it. And so it remains one of those enduring, like, weird entity video cases, which just baffles the mind.
All right, reveal time. When I was very, very young, one of the words that used to set me off and make me giggle endlessly for what could be minutes on end was the word pantaloons. I just think it sounded very funny. And you use the word pantaloons in your book.
I feel like it's a word that is not used enough, Tim. Pantaloons is a fantastic word.
It is. Yeah. And for some reason, it's worth a giggle. I don't know.
It's, yeah, I'm bringing pantaloons back. I mean, not actual pantaloons, but
right.
Usage terms.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I really do, Richard. Yeah, I appreciate a good use of the word pantaloons. In fact, I may start calling my own pants pantaloons.
Good idea. No boring person ever wore pantaloons.
That's right.
Just saying.
They were very flamboyant. You
know, plenty of pirates did.
That's right. Yeah. And so from now on, when someone says, what are you doing? Well, I'm just checking my pantaloons to see if I shat them. So there you go. If someone asks me, that's how I shall address them.
And pantaloons for safety.
Pantaloons. Yes. Yes, indeed. Now, I'll address one or two more things here, and then I'm going to let you go, my friend. Again, the book is a wonderful one, folks, and I encourage you to go get it. The name of the book is Monsters, Myths, Legends, and Real Encounters. Let's talk a little bit about the phenomena of El Chupacabra. I have a friend who's in Puerto Rico who I've talked about with this phenomena. And when you talk to someone who's from a Caribbean, either a Caribbean nation or from South America, they talk about Chupacabra in almost a revered way. Whereas when we talk about it, we kind of joke around about, oh yeah, it's a mutt with mange. And we kind of brush it off. Like it's not necessarily a big deal. But you get a very, not only a revered tone, but sometimes you get a frightening tone from people who have had very real experiences with this cryptid. What is your, do you find that? Do you find that experience that it's really, there's different mindsets among different people when it comes to Chupacabra?
I find that that's true with numerous cryptids and monsters, actually. A lot of it is culturally and regionally kind of variable. So yeah, with Chupacabra, there are stories that come out of Puerto Rico of not just the typical four-legged, coyote with mange, which is the standard US explanation for the Chupacabra, but winged Chupacabras that pounce, bounce, and fly through the sky. So there is a genuine belief in that there, and you always want to respect those cultural beliefs. I don't know what people are seeing in those cases, but again, it is not a conventional animal. If it acts in that way, it is not a conventional animal as we would, define the term. So whatever people are seeing, I respect their belief that they are seeing it, that they are experiencing, if that makes sense. As we come kind of across to the US, and then we come to particularly the southwestern US, you start to hear more of these stories of Chupacabra in the more arid parts of the US and in Mexico. They're prevalent stories. You do wonder if it's the same genesis of cryptid, or if it's something else entirely. And yes, unquestionably, some of the Chupacabra stories can be explained away as being mangy coyotes, unquestionably, but not all of them, not if the eyewitness testimony is accurate.
Yeah. There's a small section of the book as we're beginning to wrap up here. We got about 5 minutes left in the program. There's a small section in the book where you talk a little bit about paranormal television and how sometimes it's difficult to capture some of these creatures on TV. And it has been. It's been a tough row to hoe for quite a few programs who have tried to capture, whether it be Bigfoot or anything, UFOs. It could be Loch Ness Monster, could be whatever it is that you're out trying to look for. It's not like these things stop and allow you to take pictures or video or whatever it is. Why do you surmise, first of all, that it's so tough to try and catch one of these creatures on camera?
I think that I'll choose my words carefully. In some cases, we may not be dealing with a real phenomenon, right? I would say probably in the majority of cases, we aren't dealing with a real phenomenon. Some of these are story and folklore and myth, coupled with noises of breaking branches in the woods made by entirely normal animals that have grown on and taken a life of their own. So we have to confront that from the outset. Certain monster stories are just that. They're stories, they're myths, they're legends. And then we get down to the interpretation. I mean, the footage of the Loch Ness Monster, the famous Tim Dinsdale film of the wake going across the loch, has been debated ad infinitum over the years. This was obviously pre long pre a long time before Photoshop or the ability to digitally manipulate images. So I find some of the older footage more compelling, like the Patterson-Gimlin film. Then you get into the whole was this a person in a suit? Was this a speedboat going across the loch debate? But at least that what you see on camera was on camera. Whereas now, again, we have such trickery, such manipulation, that it's tough to believe your eyes anymore, even when you do have something compelling. Here in Colorado, we had an interesting, it created quite a furore a couple of years back, a Bigfoot sighting on a mountainside that some tourists took from a train. And they were, in my opinion, absolutely genuine. They were from out of state taking a train, and they got what looked like Bigfoot on this hillside. Turns out that there was a Bigfoot brewery located in the region, and they happened to, have a Sasquatch suit. So yeah, so we live in a day and age where it's like you always have to question the reality of what's going on. And just because you do get it on film, or apparently have it on film, doesn't mean it's genuinely a cryptid.
I remember too, I don't remember if it was a year or two ago, they had the footage of, I think it was out in the middle of, was it the desert? They had a picture of what looked like Sasquatch sitting in the middle of what might have been a butte. I think it was sitting almost cross-legged. And it looked like it was shot from a helicopter. And it almost looked like it was a perfect AI shot, you know? I mean, it was too good to be true. And so, of course, everybody says, oh, it's AI. It's got to be an AI shot, right? And because it's just too good to be true. And we're in that age, Richard, where I don't think we can believe our eyes anymore. We
No.
just can't. And
No, aliens could land on the White House lawn and half the country wouldn't believe it.
yet our government is saying let's give them the files, right?
I'll believe it when I see it, because the files are not there, are they? I mean, again, staying out of political waters, we've yet to see any administration be truly transparent about disclosure, and I doubt that we ever will.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't argue on that at all. Yeah.
But for argument's sake, like, if they were to release every UFO file that they have, again, half, if not more than half, of the country would say, this is crap. This is not true. This is misinformation, disinformation, fake news, call it what you will. Folks no longer are willing to assess evidence. I think it's we've lost that ability as humans, or we're losing it rapidly.
One last one. Small Town Monsters came out with a documentary a few years ago where they were interviewing indigenous people on reservations, and they were talking about how they knew for a fact that there were either skinwalkers or Sasquatch that were being hunted on their lands by government, taken off, removed, and maybe even, you know, whether they be dead or alive, were taken off their land and then researched. And they knew this for a fact. It was just, you know, like it was business as usual, like you were going to the store. And they were talking about encounters where they would have Sasquatch that would land on the roofs of their house. They would shake their houses, kind of malevolent type experiences. Do you think that, since we're talking about UFO files and government having those files, do you think there's a set of these Sasquatch files that are out there that the government maybe has encounters with Sasquatch out there, that they're hiding those files as well?
I think that if somebody were doing that in an organized way, it would be an assumption that that was the government as opposed to a private entity. So how do we know, you know, that this is a governmental program as opposed to someone with deep pockets and a fascination for this? I find that I'm open to hearing any kind of testimony and evidence. The big problem with the paranormal field, with cryptozoology, whatever you want to call it, let's just call it the realm of the weird, which you and I, of course, you know, we move in those circles and have done for decades. The big problem is the lion's share of what we look into is anecdote, is experiential. And any detective will tell you the worst form of evidence in terms of veracity is eyewitness testimony.
Yeah.
Detectives hate it. We don't see what we think we see. We don't experience what we think we experience. We are so easily fooled, even when we are being completely sincere and genuine. So I keep coming back to, where is the physical evidence? Where is the carcass? Where is something that can be analyzed and conclusively be proven to be anomalous? And I've yet to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. It just, to me, it seems like, and I'll tie this up on a nice little bow here. It seems like if you have one department that could be looking after UFOs, Department of Defense, you might have a department like Department of Natural Resources or Wildlife or even Park Rangers, whatever it may be in the federal government, that may be looking at Sasquatch. Someone who's already doing
I'd love to know what line item of the budget that falls under. The one kind of case I'm aware of happened in the UK was fascinating. We had some big cat sightings out on the moors, like 30 years ago, and mm-hmm. they actually deployed teams of Royal Marine snipers to try and shoot these big gray cats.
Really?
These are guys that are very stealthy, highly trained, because livestock was just being savaged and people were reporting essentially what were black panthers, you know? Marines never, to our knowledge anyway, bagged anything. So you would think if there is some Bigfoot stuff going on, they would deploy the Navy SEALs or the Green Berets. I've uncovered, and I'm well aware of, quite a few sightings of Bigfoot, by the way, during military exercises. It seems that really takes place because the military exercises in these rural areas, of course, wooded areas away from civilization, which is the kind of, you know, dream spot for Sasquatch. But there have been more than a few credible eyewitness accounts of military units being tailed or shadowed by what appears to be Bigfoot.
Whoa. I think that's where we'll leave people today on that note. That's a creepy enough note to leave people. The book is Monsters, Myths, Legends, and Real Encounters. Richard Estep, and he's holding it up right there on video. Richard Estep is the author of this wonderful book. It is put out by Visible Ink Press. Richard, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. What a book.
Always a pleasure, Tim. Thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation to come back on the show.
Thank you so much, my friend, for joining us. Folks, we're on the weekend, and again, a couple of notes for you. One, you can get your Darkness Radio and True Crime Tuesday swag by going to darknessradioshow.com. Two, the Apple app will be updated. It should be by the beginning of the week this week. I'm in contact with our developer to get that done. Three, by gosh, we're on the weekend, and we're getting a little bit of snow here in the Midwest, and we're getting some bad weather all over the country, as a matter of fact. That means there's cleanup to be done. There's spring cleanup to be done as well. Make sure that you get out there and help your elderly and disabled folks in your community or your family this weekend. There's lots of stuff to be done. And of course, we want to make sure we include our elderly and disabled folks in our community and make them feel a part of our families as well. A message from your friends here at Darkness Radio. Be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. Help someone out. All right, that'll do it for this week. For Mally Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, for Beer City Bruiser, for Travis Thorpe, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for continuing to watch and listen to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever?
Coming crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.